Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMoney.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Jacob Applebaum is a computer programmer, hacker, and journalist. He was a core member of Tor and a major player in the world of information privacy. Through his access to NSA films released by whistleblower Edward Snowden, he helped break stories like the U.S. government spying on Angela Merkel. He was good-looking, charismatic, a crucial spokesman for WikiLeaks, a highly sought-after writer and public speaker, and has worked with major cultural stars like Ai Weiwei and Laura Poitras. But in 2016, in the wake of sexual abuse accusations, everything came to a halt. Since then, a cloak of silence has descended on everything about him. Is the U.S. government surveilling him? Is he a victim of COINTELPRO? Will he end up like Julian Assange, locked up for years without a trial? And how come nobody wants to talk about Jacob Applebaum anymore? Nobody Wants to Talk About Jacob Applebaum is a new documentary that looks at this man's life before and after 2016. The film follows him from East Berlin to Tel Aviv to Portugal to interview him and those who know him. It's the latest work by award-winning Toronto documentarian Jamie Kastner. I've spoken with Jamie on this show. The Secret Disco Revolution in 2012, The Skyjacker's Tale in 2016, There Are No Fakes in 2019, and Charlotte's Castle in 2023. His new doc is now playing in Vancouver, is showing in Toronto at the Lightbox on Sunday, June 23rd, ahead of the CBC Gem premiere on June 26th. And I'm very pleased to welcome back via Zoom Jamie Kastner, someone who actually does want to talk about Jacob Applebaum. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks for the wonderful intro.
Thanks for coming in again. Jacob Applebaum was a pretty famous person who disappeared from public view in 2016. When did you first hear about him?
I first heard about him around that time. I was I heard about him through a lawyer, a radical lawyer named Margaret Ratner Kunstler, who appeared in my earlier film, as you may recall, The Skyjacker's Tale. She had, early in her career, been a defense lawyer for the eponymous skyjacker in a murder trial. And at this stage of her career, had found herself among a group of lawyers defending Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. So she mentioned, we were doing some press, in fact, in New York for the Skyjacker's Tale maybe it was 2017, in fact, that it came out there. And I just asked her what she was working on, and she mentioned she was defending him. And then I around that time, there was a film by Laura Poitras that was coming out called Risk. This was her follow-up, her less-known follow-up to Citizen Four. And in fact, I believe was the film she was working on prior to... it's a film about WikiLeaks, in which she got quite a bit of access to Julian Assange and others. And Jacob Applebaum is in this film, is in Risk. And he kind of, even though he is not the main character, he really jumped off the screen to me. He's kind of an electrifying speaker and has what struck me as this kind of very clear-eyed, revolutionary voice and energy. And in contrast, in fact, to the way that Julian Assange is portrayed in that film. And then, but he kind of disappears, Applebaum, about two-thirds of the way through that film. And I was intrigued by him, by this world. You know, I thought, this wasn't the focus of Poitras' film, but I thought there's probably another film in this guy. And I was intrigued, and I had this contact. So that's how it all started for me.
Oh, let's talk about his work. One of his biggest contributions is as part of the Tor project. What is the Tor project, and why is anonymous communication so important?
This was all, I mean, I'm a complete tech idiot.
Oh, okay.
And so this was all a, it was not born of my interest in the, my pre-existing interest in the tech world, but it was a steep and an interesting learning curve. the Tor project, Tor stands for the Onion Browser, and it is a an anonymous web browser that is somehow, I won't try to get too intricate in my explanation of it, but it, it functions through a relay of servers that are operating anonymously all around the world, so that if someone using this browser puts in a search term, the signal is bouncing through so many servers that it, it makes it, I believe, virtually impossible for it to trace the source of the commands. So this has been used, you know, for good and ill, and is sometimes part of what is called the dark web, a kind of a notorious illegal, sometimes illegal marketplace. And Jacob Applebaum became, he didn't invent it, but he became the face of it at a time. And it was not only a web browser, but it became the kind of a locus of a community. It became of a whole kind of pro-privacy, anti-surveillance community that would gather at these conferences and would communicate online in various terms, various platforms, I should say. And yeah, that's, and he became the face of this. He was sort of like the main evangelist, and was sort of pushed forward by the two founders of the actual program to kind of champion, spread the word, and help spread it throughout the world and to places such as Iran and China, where government interference with the web was a problem, and would be revolutionary groups, let's call them, or activists of one kind or another, could really use something like the Tor browser to communicate.
I understand it was used during the Arab Spring, for example. It was used by the revolutionaries to communicate out of reach from their oppressive governments.
Yes, and one of the interesting things and challenging things about Applebaum as a subject is, because so much of his work has been secretive, it's very hard. Nobody wants to talk about Jacob Applebaum, including, as I discovered, Jacob Applebaum.
Let's talk about this. I was just going
to
say.
So just to say, yes, he was, I believe, he did play a key role on the ground in some of those countries, helping set up the technology that facilitated the Arab Spring. I got that.
But as he is very, very concerned about secrecy and very conscious of surveillance, I wonder if you could talk about what steps did you have to go through to safely interview him and record it on camera and film. I'm sorry, camera and mic.
Well, I mean, it's there's no doubt that for various reasons, he was the most challenging subject I have ever made a documentary about. In a number of ways, he's sort of both brilliant and at times infuriating, and you're wondering as you wade into this world, and it was a question of wading into a new world with which I was really unfamiliar. It was like something out of a Le Carre novel, you know, like a spy netherworld, a kind of purgatory in which this guy exists, and you're wondering all the time, you know, basically, is he paranoid or are they really out to get him? And there's evidence in both, evidence for both. But in any case, he was certainly fascinating, and I felt his life was also kind of inextricably entwined with a cross current of major cultural events of our time. You know, this the issue of surveillance and the anti-surveillance movement, And then also, ultimately, jumping ahead a little bit here, Me Too, or what became Me Too, and how these two collided in a really unique way. But getting access to him was extremely a painful and protracted process. Began through this being put in touch by email through this lawyer, but then I quickly learned there are many other, you know, email is child's play. You know, there are many other levels of communication that you're supposed to be using if you want to be safe. There's GPG keys. There's encrypted programs like or apps like Signal and Wire, and you begin to discover that the AI like that. You begin to discover that these are apps that are used by both intelligence folks and revolutionaries, and some are you know, and some like WhatsApp, you learn, which you hear is also an encrypted app, is in fact owned by Meta. And then there's evidence through the Snowden leaks that Facebook was one of the companies, Google was another that was giving information to the U.S. government. So you start to become aware. I had not really paid attention that closely, when it was all happening. But as I waded into this story, it's stuff that kind of micro and macro you start thinking about, and it starts to drive you a bit bonkers, you know? It's you realize that every conversation you could have is monitored, and by whom? And he had so many enemies, you know. Again, were they real? Were they imagined? Well, obviously, some of them were real. Enough of them are. He's named in the indictments against Julian Assange, or not named, but he's identified clearly. It's him as WLA3, that is WikiLeaks associate 3, in the indictments against Assange. So it was a protracted process, yeah, of apps and a whole bunch of kind of digital cloak and dagger that I had never experienced before.
Parts of it were even funny because he has a Roomba. That's one of those stupid floor cleaners that goes bouncing around your floor. But he had to find one that doesn't record with a camera everything that's going. And apparently, he's right. There's a Roomba that there's cases where they leaked the little device, took pictures of a woman using the bathroom and put it on a social network without her knowing. So it's maybe he's looking the right way. Enough. Yeah,
that's the thing. And I wanted to kind of make, you know, I'm kind of in the film peripherally, you know, because I felt it was necessary, or it was a sort of part of the story to introduce the audience, give the audience this feel, you know, through a surrogate like myself, into, you know, what it's like to wade into this world. And the kind of constant questioning and looking over your shoulder that you're not used to doing. And, you know, when is a floor vacuum no longer just a floor vacuum, but a device that is, as he puts it, you know, taking pictures of your house and uploading maps of where you live to the, you know, to be sold back to you through surveillance capitalism. You know, that's a sentence to chew on when you're just like thinking about how to get rid of cat hair.
So let's talk about the very sticky situation at the center of the film, where he was accused, I think mainly on Twitter, by people he worked with or people he knew, of sexual abuse or sexual assault in one case. But he raises, or the film raises, the question, is it like a situation like with Julian Assange, where they were trying to get him to go to Sweden, whether or not the accusations are true, but trying to get him to go to Sweden so they could deport him to the United States. Does Applebaum believe that this was a campaign to break up the Tor community?
Well, I think, you know, I come to I feel it's important to understand this story which is why I made a feature documentary as opposed to tweeted about it. You know, it's a story with many layers, with many aspects. And I think the accusations a need to be understood in the larger context, which I have not seen portrayed in a documentary before, of this community and the work that they're doing. I mean, this is the community that Assange sprung from and Edward Snowden in some ways is a part of. But you only, the documentaries that I've seen before, it's usually just like a lone guy. This, as much as anything, is a tale of this community. And as it's a tale of the rise and fall of Applebaum, it's also a tale of the rise and fall of this community. And largely the community centered around Tor. The Tor browser still exists, but the community is completely, you know, shot compared to what it was. So we come discussing the accusations is of course important, and they're allegations of abuse that range that were published initially anonymously on a website which the accusers kind of set up, called jacobapplebaum.net. It was still up for much of the production of this film, but it has since been taken down. And basically, it has a bunch of pictures of him that they somehow got their hands on, and a number of accusers tell stories under pseudonyms about alleged abuse by Applebaum that ranges from, you know, being mean to someone, humiliating someone at dinner, to a truly unusual, as it struck me at the time, incident of unwanted backwashing during an orgy. If my memory serves, I may be conflating a couple of accusations here, to one accusation of rape. And obviously these are, you know, well, particularly the latter accusation is incredibly serious.
Very serious.
And yes, there is, in many ways, it's worth saying that Applebaum's life has kind of run parallel to Julian Assange's. And also he was also the heir apparent to Assange. And as things started really heating up for Assange, around 2010, following the Chelsea Manning's leaks of U.S. War crimes in Iraq, particularly the collateral murder video, the Applebaum, who had been a kind of rising star in this movement, but it was an anonymous, I mean, at least he'd been a rising star in Tor. He had also been working for WikiLeaks, but WikiLeaks people don't, other than Assange, don't often, you know, advertise who they are, what their role is, for obvious reasons. For some reason, Applebaum stepped in 2010 at something called the Hope Conference, which was a huge hackers on planet Earth. It was a big hacker conference in New York. And he had a whole bait and switch anticipating that Assange was meant to do the keynote address, but Applebaum showed up and did it at the last minute. And there were apparently all of these, and it actually has been proven, or documents have since been leaked that have confirmed this. There were all sorts of, you know, undercover operatives there waiting to arrest Assange. And they were then Applebaum kind of arranged for a decoy and fled and went to the airport. Okay. Anyway, so yes, it has been convincingly argued in Assange's case that the allegations of assault were baseless, and that what has actually happened is that it has maneuvered Assange into the hands of very much closer into much more closely into the sights of the U.S., who want him extradited, you know, and he's basically hanging by a thread in this maximum security prison in London, you know, managing to put it off here and there, but it, you know, he's far from safe. And yes, by Applebaum, as goes Assange, so will go. Well, actually, that's not entirely true. On the off chance, let's say Assange is extradited, which is unfortunately the most likely thing that'll happen, at that point, the dragnet will start to close on all his close associates, like Applebaum. And that's why they've been naming these people in the indictments against Assange.
Well, it's a fascinating story and way more to see if you watch the film. Thanks so much for talking with me, Jamie.
Thank you very much, Daniel.
Jamie Kastner's new doc, Nobody Wants to Talk About Jacob Applebaum, opens at the TIFF Lightbox in Toronto on June 23rd and is streaming on CBC Gem on June 26th. This is Daniel Garber, the movies, each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.